Oh yeah, real lifers, citizens of the world, welcome to the Real Life Global Movement, where our mission is to inspire, empower, and connect the world through English.
We believe that English should be a fun and enriching part of your life that you can practice and enjoy whenever and wherever you want. Are you tired of boring lessons that suck the life out of your learning? Are you ready to step up your game and become a kick-ass English speaker?
Well, we're here to guide and inspire you on your journey to true lifelong fluency. It's time to stop just learning English and start living it. Can I get an aw yeah?
Aw yeah!
Aw yeah, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls from all across the interwebs. This is Ethan from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, effective, and
gritty
way to learn English. So download this podcast now and listen to us while you're on the bus, shooting some hoops in the hood, or even
running on the treadmill.
Oh yeah. I'm here in the Transcontinental Studio with my good buddy Justin Murray. How's it going, man?
Oh yeah. I'm really excited to be here to have this conversation, to do this lesson, do this podcast, and yeah, looking forward to this.
Have you been able to catch up on your sleep? I heard that there were some pretty crazy parties going on there.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I got a little bit sick. A lot of times when you can't sleep enough, or when people, your neighbors are being really loud, then you might lose some sleep and get some sick. So that happened to me. So if my voice is a little bit scratchy, that's the reason.
Got a frog in the throat?
What do you mean by a frog in the throat?
Don't we usually say that when you've got like a lot of phlegm, a lot of mucus in your throat, and your voice is a little bit funny? We say you've got a frog in your throat.
Yep, you got it. And so I said in the intro, right, while running on a treadmill, right? What is a treadmill?
Treadmill is basically, if you're a runner and the weather's not good outside, or you don't like running outside for whatever reason, you'll run on this machine. And
I said, what about the word gritty?
Gritty. So I was actually about to say that you lost some sleep last week, but I know you're pretty gritty, so you won't let that get in the way of recording a kick-ass podcast. Grit is, we both read a book called Grit, in which it's defined as a combination of passion and perseverance, right?
Yep, and this is actually one of the main components of today's lesson, because we got some really great information and just ideas, insights about how determination, grit, passion, and perseverance, how all this can come together and really help you become a kick-ass English learner.
Yeah, exactly. And as any of you who listened to last week's podcast, number 150, and if you have not done that, then press pause and go listen to that one first. We are talking about the real life way. We are on step one of the real life way this week. The first step is called what, Justin?
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Exactly. So what does that mean? We're going to kind of use that quote or an expression in English, where there's a will, there's a way, to explain this first very fundamental part of the real life way. So what exactly does that mean, where there's a will, there's a way?
Well, it's a saying in English, where there's a will, where you have desire, where you have that intention, there is a way. So you just need to find that way. So, and this goes back to our promise of inspiring, empowering, connecting you to the world through English. And in the inspire part, our mission is to awaken the determination that you need to realize your true potential, not only as an English learner, but as a human being. And so that's the will, the determination. And if you have that, you can find the way, and we're going to help you do that.
I mean, really, if you have the will, you can do anything, right?
Absolutely. It's so critical. And today we're going to dive into this. And to start with, I really wanted to share a quote. And we're going to come back to our kick-ass quote. We used to do this every episode, but there's a quote that really illustrates this. And I don't know who this is by, actually. I think it's anonymous. If you are not willing to learn, no one can help you. If you are determined to learn, no one can stop you. So this goes back to the idea that, like, somebody who doesn't really want it, who doesn't really have that will, they're not going to be successful no matter how many resources they have. It's just really difficult. Even if you have the best teacher in the world, the best resources, if you're talented, and somebody who, even if they lack many of the other things, if they have the determination, that relentless desire, then no one can stop you. You're unstoppable. And this is really what we want to share with you today and really help you guys realize.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the big problems for, I would probably say, the bulk of English learners, that their motivations aren't really in order. And what I mean by that is that a lot of people, a lot of students I've had, for example, it's really, they're learning English out of a necessity of needing to get a better job or needing to be able to travel, or they need to learn English. But they don't have that really, that desire, that want that really drives them forward to go through all of the difficult, the speed bumps that you're going to have to go over in order to reach a conversational level. So I think that's the first thing, is just because you need English for your job, for example, you can probably find a deeper motivation, which is going to be much more powerful for you in helping you to achieve your goals.
So you mentioned like the fact that learners are bored, that most people listening to this have been through maybe the existential crisis of learning English and like maybe the traditional methods and just learning grammar. A lot of times it can get boring, and a lot of times maybe it can be you might not have a good teacher or a good method, but at the bottom of it, you have to find a way to get motivated and really connect that purpose and start to see the life-changing potential with English. Mm-hmm. Understand that it's the gateway to a completely new world of experience, opportunities, and perspectives, not only as individuals, but as members of this planet. Another thing I think it's a really big illusion is that learners think that it should be easy. They see somebody who's successful and then they look at them and they think, like, this person just must have natural talent. It must have been easier for them. And they don't realize that person has actually been through their own process and they've actually worked really hard. So they come just full of excuses.
Yeah. And I think like another thing is that maybe it's not necessarily 100% their fault, because I just remember living in Brazil, living in Spain. So often you see different English schools and their advertising, they say, oh, get fluent in 6 weeks with our methodology, which doesn't, it makes people start to think that, oh, I'm going to go through this course. That's the solution. I'm going to have this teacher that's going to teach me this method, and that's the solution. I'm going to listen to this podcast talking about the Real Life Way, and that's the solution. Basically, those are all there to help you. It's like the rungs on the ladder to help you get up to where you need to go. But you, in the end, have to actually be the one to climb the ladder. You actually have to do the things that are going to propel you forward. You can't depend on a teacher. You can't depend on any methodology. You actually have to make the effort.
Just owning your process, just taking responsibility. And because it always comes back to you, you know, you're going to go through different teachers, different methodologies, and just try different things. And it's good to try different things and really figure out what works and what doesn't work. But you have to be the self-directed learner. And that's the only way to succeed on a lifelong scale.
For sure. All right. So should we jump into these three pillars of determination that you've laid out, J-Man?
Yeah, absolutely. So determination, it's like we talked about, you know, willpower, desire, determination. So it's like, what is it? We've kind of broken this up into three areas. We break it up into desire, vision, and discipline. These are the three aspects of your learning that you need to have down to at least be connected to in order to be successful as an English learner, to get fluent, not only as an English learner, but in life in general. So we've learned a lot, not only from teaching English, but read books on the psychology of success, the psychology of achievement, performance. There's a lot of research out there, more and more, that Ethan and I have really gotten into and applied to our own teaching to really help identify the root of the difficulty that a lot of people are having. It's not like a technical root. It's not because you don't have enough grammar or enough exercises or resources or opportunities to learn English. The problem is that people just get stuck motivationally. It's like almost an existential crisis. So this is why the first one is desire. You need to really want it, because if you don't have a will, there probably isn't going to be a way. So where there's a will, there's a way. How would you describe the main aspects of desire, Ethan?
So I think it kind of starts with something that I always tell my students is a quality they need to develop to be successful, especially at the beginning, is being very curious, always asking questions, always trying things, being very open-minded to trying things. Because I'll give the example with my own students. I have many different tools that I use, many different exercises that I use. For some people, a certain tool or a certain exercise will be extremely effective. And for other people, it will be boring or it won't be effective. So I think recognizing first, everyone is unique in the way that they learn, and that you need to be open and curious to trying new things. The next thing is having a purpose for why you're learning. And as we kind of hinted at the beginning, usually for most people, just getting a better job or getting a promotion or whatever is not a big enough motivation, because it has to be, the pain has to outweigh the effort. And generally, it's kind of just is one of those dreams like, oh, someday I'll have good enough English to get that job that I've always wanted, or someday I'll have good enough English to travel the world, when you really need to have a purpose that is driving you today. Every single day gets you out of bed, and even if you have to get up at 5:30 in the morning before the break of dawn to get in your 30 minutes of English study before starting your day, you need to have a purpose that's that strong, that burning inside you, that clear, that you can reflect on every single day. And I would say those are like at the core of this aspect of determination, desire.
Yeah, I would add to that, like once you get going, a lot of people will start like a new activity and they'll be like, yes, I'm going to do this. They'll get so excited and you feel that passion. But it's like Angela Duckworth, the author of Grit, that book on the science of achievement, she said grit, similar to determination, is about passion and perseverance. So it's not the type of passion that's like you're going to really want it one day and then the next day just like be lazy. It's the ability to really day in and day out. And also because every endeavor, every learning process, pretty much you start off with a lot of motivation, but then that motivation will dip down. It will be low some days. So it's important to be able to persevere through those difficult moments.
There's an image that I actually like to share in the show notes and in the email we send out for this to our subscribers. Actually, it's an image that Justin showed me that it shows like most people, it shows a man on a bike and his goal at the end. It shows first like how most people think it'll be, which is just maybe like a straight uphill line. So like he just has to go straight up this hill to arrive at his destination. And then the next picture shows how it really is. And it shows like, oh, actually, he has to cross this lake that's got alligators in it, and he has to climb this snowy mountain and all these other things before he gets to his goal, his achievement. So I think that that's a really good visual representation for what we're talking about here.
And it goes back to what you were talking about trying things constantly and about taking responsibility too, because being in that class with 10 or 20 or 30 students, the teacher's going to give a very generic lesson plan, but some things that might not work for you. So you need to take learning into your own hands and not just learn in school, but learn outside as well, learn outside of the classroom. To close this part here about desire, I just want to give, there's a metaphor by this psychologist named Jonathan Haidt, and it's called The Elephant and the Rider. And basically he talks about, imagine an elephant with the guy riding it. So think about who's more powerful and who's smarter. So the elephant is this really big, powerful animal, and the rider is in control. He's riding it. But if the elephant decided that he wanted to really take control into his own hands, he could, because he's way more powerful. So the key is to get to the point where it's like the elephant and the rider are going in the same direction. It's like your rational mind says that you might want to learn English. That's the rider in this case. But if your elephant, your emotional part, your motivation doesn't really want it, you can't do anything to really get it going. But once you get it going, if you can align your motivation with your rider, your rational self, then you power forward with so much progress so quickly. So this is the main idea about really plugging in to your desire, to your will. This will take you so far.
Yeah. And just to make this kind of more practical for people, I thought I would give them just like an exercise that I like to do with all of my students to get them to think about why they're learning English, to like really, really define and to be able to get in contact every day with that why they're learning. And it only takes maybe 15 minutes or so. It obviously depends how deep you want to dive with this exercise. But you're just going to sit down with a piece of paper and you're going to think of, why are you learning English?
Aw, yeah, this is Justin, and we're going to take a quick break from the podcast for another simple but powerful native connected speech tip, brought to you by our very own real-life native immersion course, where Ethan, Chad, and I, Justin, not only inspire, empower, and connect you on the real-life way, but we also specialize in helping you decipher, use, and infuse native English into your everyday life. In order to open our ears and the muscles of articulation in our mouth to the way that natives really speak, we need to recognize that natives don't speak like robots. We speak with rhythm and flow, we follow a predictable pattern, which we are going to teach you to perceive and imitate. These connected speech tips are advanced, so if you want to get the most out of them, we highly recommend you download the transcript, give it your full attention, and repeat this part as much as you need to. Today, we're going to use a popular song to show you how natives blend the sounds and expressions like got you, which becomes gotcha, or nice to meet you, which becomes nice to meet you. Words that end with T, followed by words that begin with Y, often form a ch sound. Got you becomes, repeat after me, got you.
or even gotcha. Nice to meet you becomes, repeat after me, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Two more common words that blend together are what you, which becomes what you, or even whatcha. Let's do another imitation exercise. I like what you said becomes, repeat after me, I like what you said. I like what you said. What you really want to say becomes, repeat after me, what you really wanna say. What you really wanna say. This is advanced stuff, but now we're going to get really ninja. So we know that what you becomes what you. But did you know that adding the word are in between the what and the you and what are you can also become what you? For example, what are you doing becomes, repeat after me, what you doing? What you doing? What are you going to do becomes, repeat after me, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? You see, in more relaxed or even playful situations, natives often omit the R in what are you, leaving what you, or like we learned, what you. And finally, I'm gonna share an excellent example of how natives do this in the popular song, Bad Boys, by the band Inner Circle. We're gonna slow it down to about 80% speed, so if you wanna sing along, you'll find the lyrics in the transcript with complete pronunciation breakdowns. Listen to it and pay attention to all the times that we morph what you want to what you want and what are you going to do to what you gonna do. If you know the lyrics, I encourage you to sing along. But if not, treat it as a listening exercise. Let's do this.
Bad boys, what you want, what you want. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Oh yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. As you can see, there's a ton of connected speech in that song, exemplifying today's native connected speech tip. To really learn and master these sounds, I highly recommend that you listen and repeat and practice a lot. This is the kind of native English that we teach you to decipher, use, and infuse into your everyday life. You can learn more about the Real Life Native Immersion course in the email that you received with this lesson or at www.reallifeglobal.com/immersion. Now let's get back to this episode of The Real Life Way.
Just that question, write down that question, why am I learning English? And you can write down as many different ideas that come to mind. So, you know, if it is get a better job so that I can help my kids learn, so that I can travel, so I can see the world, so I can speak to foreigners in my city, whatever it is, you're going to write down all these different motivations. And you might even add into this another exercise if you want to spend a little extra time. So if you find that your main motivation is, oh, I want to get a better job or I want to get a promotion, then that's not, again, it's not really the main motivation. So ask yourself again, why? Why do I want to get a better job? You know, maybe the answer is, oh, so I can make more money. And then ask yourself again, why? And keep doing this. This actually comes out of that book that we were talking about, Grit. You keep doing this until you get to the point where the answer is just because. You can't go any deeper, and that's going to be your core motivation.
It's almost like I can't not do it.
Exactly.
Right? That's why.
What can't you not do? Pretty a little bit of a confusing sentence. So you're going to come up with that. That's going to be your really big goal, your really big vision, which we're going to talk about in a minute. You should feel excited when you think about it, when you actually imagine that situation in your head. And then the last thing you're going to do is get a sticky note or a piece of paper, a small piece of paper, and you're going to write this out as an affirmation. An affirmation is basically a goal, but it's written in the present tense as if it were already true. So you might say, for example, I am comfortable and confident speaking English with anyone, anywhere. And that's your affirmation. And you're going to stick that somewhere where you're going to see it every day, hopefully multiple times per day. So if I were to do this, I would probably stick it right next to my computer because I work on my computer all the time. I had one of my students, he took a picture of it and set it as the background on his phone. So he would see it every time he looked on his phone. You can be as creative with this as you want. But the important thing is that you're coming into contact and thinking about this every single day. So that said, should we move on to the vision aspect?
Yeah, so that's desire. It's your why. It's your purpose. The next aspect of really being a great English learner and a great English speaker is having a vision. Having a vision of yourself, where you're at in your own English learning process, to be self-aware of what you need, be aware of where you want to be and what you're capable of, to believe in yourself. So it's like kind of your vision of the world and your place in it, your vision of English learning, of all the things you've learned about your own process. So we're going to give you a couple recommendations for how you can do this. So the first thing is having clear goals. You know, where do you want to be with your English? I think it was excellent, like your student said there, to be a comfortable and confident English speaker. That's a pretty clear goal. I think you can be more clear as well if you want to actually get to the objective side. There's something called the European Common Reference of Languages, which explains all the different levels. It explains in a very detailed way what it's like to be like the most advanced English speaker that you can be. And a lot of the tests out there, the standardized tests, will map English fluency onto this framework. But besides that, getting self-awareness, you can get that from, you know, a teacher or a coach, somebody to give you feedback. That's really important. Moving on to the belief in yourself. So it's really important to have a vision of yourself where you really have the confidence that you can do this, because having that belief, having that confidence is really going to help your motivation as you go along. Like Ethan, you've really focused on this. You've created a lot of content around how to be a confident English speaker, right? Mm-hmm. How would you describe that?
Confidence really is just the ability to do what's uncomfortable, even though it's uncomfortable, because you know it's going to get you where you need to be. So I would definitely say, like, I am more introverted, especially when I first meet people. But something that I've learned through learning languages, something that has helped me to become more extroverted, because I realize it's what's necessary if I want to become fluent in a language, I have to speak to people. And the sooner that you do that, the better. So it's getting to that point where you're kind of comfortable in your own skin, we might say. You kind of lean into those awkward situations, into that initial discomfort, for example, of speaking in a foreign language.
What do you mean by lean in?
You lean in, meaning that you kind of embrace it. You recognize that it's difficult and you do it anyway. That I would say that it's really important for learning English to learn how to do this. And it's also, you'll find that confidence is kind of a muscle. The more that you do it, the easier it becomes. And also kind of a part grit and in deliberate practice, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is doing things that stretch you. After a little bit, having those kind of basic conversations can become easier. So you're going to have to find ways to make the conversations more challenging. You're going to have to keep stretching yourself and keep leaning into more and more uncomfortable situations or more and more uncomfortable exercises.
In a way, stepping outside of your comfort zone, in a way, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? That embarrassment, that shame, that difficulty, just being okay with it, responding to it. And I think in some sense, like that sense of vulnerability is super important to get really comfortable with that and comfortable with mistakes and difficulties that go along with that, and recognizing this is not, there's nothing wrong with you if you make a mistake or if you can't communicate or if you have a problem. It's just part of the process.
Yeah. And I actually think in that book, Grit, as well, I thought it was really interesting that she talks about how experts, because she interviewed hundreds and maybe thousands of experts in all sorts of different fields, from athletics to academics, things like chess or spelling bees, spelling competitions. And she found that people who are really experts in their field, they embrace the mistakes. They want to know what they're doing wrong, not what they're doing right. So like when they're practicing some new skill or micro skill that they're trying to master, they're not going to ask what they did well. They want to know what they did wrong so that they can focus on overcoming what they did wrong. And I feel like most English learners, they're wanting to avoid what they did wrong. They're wanting to kind of ignore and maybe even deceive themselves a little bit that they're better than they are, or to avoid doing the things that are difficult that are going to make those mistakes emerge.
So it's like really coming down to the question of like not even caring about the external validation as much as, are you actually learning? Is it actually doing you good? Are you actually making progress?
And is it in line with your why, which we talked about before, with your core reason that you're learning?
Yeah. So Angela Duckworth in the book Grit, I highly recommend it if you want to deepen into these ideas. She has a 6-minute TED Talk. We can include this in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Another really great piece of science that contributed to our thinking on this is Carol Dweck, and she wrote a book called The New Science of Success, and she talks about growth mindset, and these ideas overlap, but kind of the idea, it's kind of like your theory about yourself. And so she discovered that there are two different mindsets, two different attitudes that people have about themselves and about learning, about what success is. And these create two fundamentally different ways of looking at, for example, intelligence. So somebody with a growth mindset will see intelligence is a question of neuroplasticity. You can change your brain. If you work hard, the difficult struggle of working hard to learn something is reciprocated by a new wiring of your brain. If you have a fixed mindset, mindset. You look at intelligent people or successful people and you believe that it's just natural talent. You can't see that they actually worked really hard for that. It goes back to this question of these failures. Do I have responsibility and do I have the opportunity to keep going and change my behavior, keep trying, keep learning, take critical feedback and learn from that. Don't be offended by it. Like a fixed mindset is going to be offended by feedback. If somebody corrects your mistakes, you get defensive or something. Or if you don't do well in a test, you feel bad. So it's a fundamentally different approach to learning that we're talking about.
And a lot of this comes out of just, kind of what we've been told by our parents, by our teachers. I know a lot of parents, they like to tell their kids, oh, like, you did such a good job on this, you're so smart, instead of telling them, you did such a good job on this, you must have worked really hard. So a lot of people, when we're growing up, will kind of value our innate talent instead of our determination, our hard work. So it's like you kind of have to change the narration in your own head. The stories we tell ourselves are crucial.
Yes, this is your vision of yourself, how you look at yourself, how you look at the world, your self-awareness, your goals. And this is really important for being successful, not just having the desire to learn, but you need to actually empower your vision, your mindset, and your attitude with the right tools to be successful.
That said, shall we jump into the last pillar of determination?
Yeah, so talked about desire, vision, and now we're going to talk about discipline. This is where we take it into the world. It's the action component. So We talked a lot about grit. What exactly is grit in the discipline sense?
People tend to think that what's really important is being talented at something. They tend to see someone who is really great at something. So for example, if you see someone from your country who's speaking English and they're speaking super fluently, you're just going to think, well, they must just be naturally gifted with languages, and I'm not, so I guess I'll never be that good. And true, people can be naturally gifted. They can have certain talents. But something that Angela Duckworth shows in Grit, which has actually been backed up by science, is that while talent is important, effort counts for twice. It counts twice as much as talent. So she actually gives a formula that skill, so your skill in something equals your natural talent multiplied by the effort that you put into it. And then skill times effort equals achievement. So if you looked at that all together, it would be skill times effort squared equals achievement, which means that effort counts twice as much as skill for being successful in something. Obviously, if you have a natural ability for learning English, for learning another language, it will be helpful. But the person who's disciplined, who's willing to work hard, who's not going to give up no matter what, is ultimately going to be more successful than the talented person who maybe has a fixed mindset or who doesn't want to work hard to achieve their goals.
They're always going to have the ability, but they never actually get to the point where they have enough skill.
Exactly.
So it's like once you reach that first platform of skill, that first layer of skill, then you apply that effort, and that the second layer of effort leads to achievement, lifelong fluency, right?
Exactly. And I've seen this a lot, like with my own learning, because a lot of times when people find out, like, I speak several different languages, they tend to say, oh, you must be such a good language learner. And I would say true, I've become a good language learner because of my experience. I've learned a lot about what goes into learning, but I don't think that I've ever had a natural talent. I never did that well in school. I always got kind of average grades in my language classes. My brother, on the other hand, I think he does have that very natural ability. But my brother is not fluent in any other languages. He speaks some basic Spanish still from what he learned in high school. But the difference there is that I am very motivated to learn languages. And so I discipline myself to, at least when I'm going through a period where I'm really studying a language, I discipline myself to do it every single day. And my brother doesn't have that motivation. So he doesn't make it a priority. And that's a very big difference between someone who has talent but not motivation and someone who doesn't have so much talent but they put in the effort.
There you go. Grit is super important in this sense. Another thing which is super important that we've talked a lot about in real life English, but it comes into play a lot more here, is habit. Again, habit is so important to really make these actions repetitive and efficient and easy in your life so that you don't demand so much effort. You don't have to make that decision every single day. So it's like if every morning you have to wake up and decide that you have to study English, that you're going to study English, it becomes really difficult. It becomes a drain and it becomes something that you give up pretty easily. But if you start with something small, you do it every day, it becomes automatic. Mm-hmm. It becomes easier and easier over time. And then you can expand that base of habits.
So the first thing, one of the first things I do with all of my students is I have them do a 30-day challenge. So what is a 30-day challenge?
A 30-day challenge is like when you select a new behavior that you want to integrate in your life. It can be something very, very small, eating an apple a day, or I don't know, maybe like running for 5 minutes. But you choose to do it every single day for 30 days. And this is like kind of that first level of developing a habit. If you do it for 30 days, then it becomes almost a lot more automatic.
Yeah, right? Exactly. They say like from different studies they've done that it takes about 30 days or up to 6 weeks, depending on the habit you're trying to develop, for it to become an actual ingrained habit where it's on autopilot, which means that you don't have to think about it. So basically I do this and I have some conditions with it. First, I have them watch this TED Talk, which I'll share in the show notes, called Try Something New. And then we develop our own 30-day challenge. So they choose something usually related to English, but I tell them if they have another priority, they can choose that. So for example, it might be that they want to get in the habit of reading every day in English. So they're going to read 5 pages every day. But it's not enough just to have the thing that you say you're going to do every day, because if that's it, then it's really easy for you one day to be like, oh, I'm really tired today, I'm not going to do it. So the other two conditions that they have, one, they have someone holding them accountable. And what does that mean, Justin, to have someone hold you accountable?
Somebody who sort of like checks on you to make sure that you're doing it. Right?
Exactly.
And there's sort of an external accountability. Like if you as a teacher come along and say, hey, did you do it? Mm-hmm. The person is much more motivated, much more likely to do it, because it's going to suck to tell you that you didn't do it, because you're going to hold them responsible. You're going to, you know, hold them accountable.
Exactly. And then the other part of it that they need to have is they have to put something at stake. What does that mean, to put something at stake?
Put something at stake is means that you're going to lose something if you don't do it, right?
Exactly. A lot of times it'll go hand in hand with the person who's holding you accountable. So for example, it could be monetary. A lot of people would just say, you know, every day I don't do this, I'm going to donate $50 to this charity, or I'm going to give $20 to this person, however much money you need it to be to motivate you to do that. But I've had a lot of people do other things. I had one of my students, she had her husband hold her accountable, and she told him, every day I don't do this, I will iron one of your shirts. And she didn't want to do that because she didn't want him to have the satisfaction of her ironing his shirts. So that was like one example. So you can get very creative with this. You know, that's kind of part of the fun of it, but it becomes extremely powerful when you have someone that's going to be checking in on you, and you have something that you're going to lose if you don't do it. Most likely you're going to do it every single day. And after those 30 days, it kind of just becomes effortless.
Yeah. So a couple things really I just wanted to underscore here, to emphasize, is that willpower, just that desire to actually do something every day, the decision, is a limited resource. And so you can't do too many habits at once. So it's like, this is the whole purpose of doing like one small habit at a time, because you need to make that habit automatic, and then you won't spend willpower on it anymore. It becomes an easier thing. If you fall off the horse, if you don't do it, if you fail for a couple of days or for a week or whatever, a lot of people will give up entirely. And important thing is just to recognize that like it happens sometimes. It's okay. Just get back on. Just start again. And that's really going to help you, give you permission to fail. And so what they say is shoot for 100% and be happy with 80. And so at any point you can get back on the horse. You can get back on the habit. And the third thing I want to emphasize is that there's a thing called keystone habits. And a lot of times these are like, it's like one important habit that will change many other habits. So for example, exercise is considered a keystone habit, because when you exercise, it affects other aspects of your life as well. So you probably eat better, maybe you sleep better, maybe you stop doing other destructive habits. So in our case with English, there's a lot of things you can do, but one keystone habit is making English a part of your everyday life. So maybe like listening to this podcast, maybe watching a TV series on a regular basis, or there are a million other things you can do, but it's finding that central core habit that's going to affect all the other habits.
Definitely.
So those are the three pillars of determination. You have desire, vision, and discipline, and this is really important for you to be successful in your English learning process.
So I just want to wrap this up by giving you guys a few small homework assignments to really get you reflecting on these ideas and applying them to your own learning. This is going to be really powerful if you actually take the time to do this. Just 10, 15 minutes is all it'll take. So grab a piece of paper, and I want you to answer these two questions. The first one is, how does English help you to fulfill your potential in life? The second one is, how does determination help you to realize your potential in the rest of your life? And of course, we already talked about a couple other exercises that you can do. The one of creating a new habit through a 30-day challenge is extremely powerful. Choose some sort of small habit and go through this yourself by picking, telling someone about your challenge, getting them to hold you accountable, and picking something that you're going to have on at stake. You might even say on Facebook, I'm going to do this thing for the next 30 days, and for every day that I don't, I'm going to, and you put whatever you have at stake. I'm going to eat sandwiches every day. I'm going to get up an hour earlier. I'm going to donate $50 to this charity. And the other one that I talked about earlier, actually defining your why and writing an affirmation that you look at daily. So you have those two questions, you have the 30-day challenge, and you have the why. Don't let all of this good information, all of this good motivation go to waste. Actually, take a little bit of time today, as soon as you finish this podcast, if you can, sit down for 15 minutes and go through these short exercises. And with that, do you have anything else you wanted to say to wrap up, Justin?
I just wanted to say this is a process. Don't think you have to learn this all at once. I mean, there are a lot of ideas here, and I encourage you to read some of these books, watch TED Talks. We're going to share some videos in the show notes, but it's a process, and it will definitely help you as you learn and as you study. So this is just the start, and we have some more really awesome lessons in the next couple of weeks and the next couple of days. So I've enjoyed sharing this with you guys, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Awesome. Let's one, two, three, aw yeah them out of here.
Let's do it.
One, two, three, aw yeah.